Still, I guess. And so how's it going so far? Any questions or comments or reflections about the loving kindness practice so far? Any discoveries? Come and sit closer. If you want to sit in a chair, why don't you bring chairs closer so we all kind of more together? Yes.
I had a really warm experience with loving kindness this week. And since I've been practicing, I sort of find myself spontaneously wishing loving kindness when I'm in different places. And I just see people and it comes upon me. And Sunday I went to a presentation. It was from some women who had been to Beijing. And they spoke of women's issues and women's issues that were really important. Part of the issues are suffering and from mutilation and not so nice things happening. And I found myself wanting peace and happiness for people everywhere, and of course I was thinking of these women because they were there in the slideshow, which really nice. And just also at the same time, it dawned on me that the perpetrators of these not so nice experiences, they were people too. And I was able to feel loving kindness and wish peace and happiness for not only the victims, but the perpetrators. And the way it felt was like, and it was just the same in here. It wasn't weighted more towards the victims who suffer quite a bit, and more than for those that apparently cause the suffering. I just know that it was noticeable that.
Wonderful.
Look,
wonderful. And you weren't condoning what they were doing.
No.
No. That is wonderful. This is the. So you're actually ahead of us. Because today we're going to talk about difficult people, and having loving kindness for difficult people, and so you've brought a wonderful example of how it can be done. And
it's a little. I mean, if I let my head click in and think, it becomes more difficult.
So what do you? I was going to say, what do you think? But what are you connecting to in those perpetrators that allows you to feel loving kindness for them?
That there is a universal goodness. There is the essence of humanity in all people, and that I too could be a perpetrator.
Great. Thank you. So someone else.
I had a wonderful experience with part of my family. Not only when my family is together, it gets very frenetic and chaotic and angry. And I think the shift is within me since I've been doing the loving kindness. And I was able to say to them, well, you know, if you really think that way, I wish you loving kindness, and just what? It was amazing. I had a miracle.
Anything else? Reports, questions, comments about loving kindness so far? Did anybody practice with offering loving kindness to neutral people? No? Just last week? And?
And a difficult person, too.
Oh.
I had a very interesting thing happen with a difficult I started off thinking about some of the things that were difficulties with that person, and then I switched, and I started picturing this person more as like full of peace. Mm-hmm. I was actually seeing her in a way that was more full and mm-hmm. whole mm-hmm. and ways that, mm-hmm. that I hoped I wasn't too manipulated mm-hmm. for, but it was a big change just in being able to view a person, be more open and kind. Mm. Well,
nice. Yeah.
On some of the times I've got such a burning, a hurt here when I focus in that way. Do you know what that is?
Focusing on who?
With loving kindness, I kind of center the heart. And
just loving kindness in general to anyone or to?
No, when we're practicing here. Uh-huh. And other times when I'm just at home, kind of focused uh-huh. in that way. And sometimes it doesn't happen, but uh-huh. sometimes it's a real burning, uh-huh. constricted feeling.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't know what it is, but it doesn't. It's not unusual to have such sensations and feelings when we do loving kindness. And as I think I said a number of times, loving kindness kind of softens things to see what's going on in the body and soft, you know, emotionally and around the heart. And sometimes the heart is in a difficult place under the kind of surface, and so the surface gets relaxed. You see the difficult place, and that's considered to be fine. In the practice of mindfulness, in the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of loving kindness, you don't have to end up feeling loving. You end up softening the heart. And what gets revealed sometimes is difficulties, anger or pain or frustration or resentment or grief. At this point, you can just continue doing loving kindness, and probably the best place to do it then is towards yourself. Or to do it towards your heart. Just send loving kindness to your heart and to your pain, to your constriction. Or just switch, start doing mindfulness practice. And it's often considered also, it's very very useful to switch and do mindfulness practice when difficulties arise from doing loving kindness. The light of loving kindness reveals difficulties and holdings. Rather than judging yourself or struggling with it or trying to do loving kindness and you can't do it so well, just change gears and do mindfulness practice towards it, and allow it to unfold in the light of mindfulness. And yes.
Years ago, my first exposure to Buddhism was through Tibetan Buddhism, yeah. and I couldn't understand the teachings, and so I found my way to Theravada teachings, which I thought I understood. But there was one practice that I heard and then didn't use, and that was, but I did use it yesterday. I woke up in the morning with a hurt in my heart and other uncomfortable feelings. And so I was just trying to stay with them when the practice that I heard came back into my memory. So it's a form of loving kindness, and what it is to send loving kindness to everyone else who's experiencing the same thing mm-hmm. at the same time. And so I did that, and when I narrowed it down to everybody who was 67 years old was waking up with and it evaporated. Mm-hmm. It evaporated, and I got carried away with this sending.
Beautiful. I think it's often helpful to feel your connection with the universal aspect of suffering that we have. We often identify with our own suffering and our own situation, and we feel sorry for ourselves or whatever. But it's actually a universal phenomenon, and to feel the universality of it, of being a human being, can lessen the holding and the judgment and many of the extra stuff around it, and it might actually disappear. That's nice. Did anybody memorize the Metta Sutta that we passed out? Even after I gave a little plug for how useful it is to memorize it? Mm-hmm. Another thing that's considered useful to memorize is the 11 benefits of loving kindness. And so you might memorize those too. And I haven't memorized them, but I'm sure many of you have read these before. But the first benefit is sound sleep. And then the second benefit is you'll awaken happily from your sleep. And you'll have no bad dreams. You'll receive respect from others. You'll be loved by the devas, by all the gods. And also you'll be protected by all the devas. You won't be harmed by fire, poison, or any weapon. The mind will be quickly calmed. You'll have a clear complexion. You'll have a calm death. And if you only do this practice and no mindfulness practice, then you'll be reborn in the heavenly realm. So that's a pretty good. You can choose which one motivates you the most. And then the other thing that's considered useful for the purposes of developing loving kindness is to reflect on the disadvantages of anger. Because anger is kind of like the opposite, or ill will. It's the opposite of loving kindness. So you reflect on the disadvantages, or reflect on the suffering involved with anger, and getting to know anger really well. And you're less likely to be interested in pursuing anger if you realize, you know, the amount of pain and suffering and conflict that arises from anger. And maybe you're more willing to see the situation in a different way, where anger is not the organizing principle for the situation. So part of all that is letting go of resentment. And understanding anger is something very important for understanding loving kindness. And a big piece needs to be understood is resentment, because resentment is a holding on to anger. Anger by itself can be clean without any holding. You lash out and it's done with. But resentment is just holding, lingering, holding. That is like poison in the system. It can really poison a person for years and years. So what does it take to release that resentment? So part of what's sometimes taught together with loving kindness meditation is a forgiveness meditation, where we'll spend time asking for forgiveness from people that we've hurt, offering forgiveness to people who hurt us, and offering forgiveness to ourselves for any harm that we ourselves have done to ourselves, any injury we've done. And forgiveness is a powerful practice. There are some teachers who will teach it as like they have one day meditation retreats, so all they do is forgiveness practice. And I think a lot of the power comes out of it because of the of how much holding that so many people have. We close our hearts to others or to ourselves, and that's really painful. And if you're going to do a loving kindness practice, you have to open up your heart. And sometimes loving kindness practice is not enough. You have to actively be involved in the process of forgiveness. But forgiveness is not so easy. You can't just decide to forgive from one day to the next or one moment to the next. And what we talk about around forgiveness is that it's an attitude or a process. It's a willingness. Forgiveness practice is a willingness to enter into the process to bring about forgiveness. To have the intention, you think this is a good idea. I want to do this. This is something I want to do. Find a way to do it. Not necessarily that you're going to do it overnight. But, you know, I've been in situations where I was so close to someone that even the very notion of thinking about forgiving that person was, you know, unacceptable. And just to simply get to the point where it was okay for me to think about the possibility of forgiving that person was a major step forward. And to reflect, think about forgiveness, think about what the holding is, reflect on what the cost is of that holding of resentment or anger, what the cost is for ourselves. Because often anger is a major source of suffering for the person who's angry. And is it worth it? Is there another way of understanding the situation than understanding situation through the eyes of anger? So there's forgiveness practice, releasing the holding, and being open-hearted again to oneself and to others. I guess maybe I've already said this in the earlier weeks, but I think it's quite phenomenal that we take a week, an hour each week, to do loving kindness practice, kind of make that a theme and a focus. And it almost makes me want to feel, or makes me kind of feel loving kindness or metta, just thinking about the fact that we're going to spend an hour doing loving kindness. I think it's such a wonderful thing. And for me, part of one of the ways, so there's a number of ways to get to loving kindness. One way is to understand anger and resentment really well. Another way is to understand the benefits of loving kindness. Another way is to go through a process of forgiveness. Another way is through the door of gratitude. And this is something that I often feel is tremendous gratitude for many things, but for just life, for being alive, gratitude for the Sangha, the people who I practice with, who have supported my practice. And in that field of gratitude, that sometimes almost for nothing at all, just a state of gratitude, it seems like it's very closely related to loving kindness. And it seems like out of gratitude comes loving kindness, out of loving kindness comes gratitude. So reflecting on gratitude and what we can be grateful for is an important piece, I think, in the whole process of loving kindness. One of the members of our Sangha here, Lilaine, is very fond of the subject of gratitude, and she talks a lot about, often enough she's talked to me about, that rather than talking about giving, which the Buddhist tradition talks a lot about, the importance of giving, we should spend more time talking about receiving, because more people have trouble receiving properly. And actually, we're receiving constantly a tremendous amount from the world. And we're actually receiving, you know, our whole life is receiving just a whole bunch of things all the time. And we tend to be so narrowly focused, this narrow band of existence that has to do with our self-identity, perhaps, that we miss that, you know, the other 99.9% of our life is this wonderful support that makes life possible. And so because we miss the wider band, the wider spectrum of what's happening, we're losing an opportunity to feel tremendous gratitude for the fact that we're just alive, and that our bodies work as well as they do, and that there are less accidents on the roads. It's phenomenal to me. I'm driving here 60 miles an hour and up there in Skyline, and they pass me and nothing happens. So let's sit now. So take a moment to just feel yourself as you're sitting here. Feeling perhaps the preciousness of being alive, of sitting here with a body that sits upright. And then you can take a couple of deeper breaths, slow, deeper breaths. Settling into your body, settling into your heart. And then breathing normally. Imagine that your breath comes in through your heart center, filling your heart, filling your chest, your being, with warmth, with fullness, with loving kindness, with all the support that the world gives us so we can exist. And then as we breathe out, our kindness, our calmness, our peacefulness out into the world. And then as you're sitting here, bring to mind a person or some of the people for whom you have caused some harm or some insult, some hurt. Maybe not a major kind of hurt, but did something you felt bad about. And thinking about this situation, this person, reflect on how forgiveness could be a part of your relationship to this person, or that their forgiveness of you. And the phrases of forgiveness are as follows. And you can say them as you wish quietly to yourself, like you would say the phrases of loving kindness. For whatever harm I have caused others, either knowingly or unknowingly, I now ask their forgiveness. Perhaps thinking of someone from today or this last week you might have hurt or been disrespectful towards. For whatever harm I have caused others, either knowingly or unknowingly, I now ask for their forgiveness. And then letting go of that. And now think of someone, think of situations or someone who has harmed you or been disrespectful towards you. And thinking of such people, for whatever harm that has been caused to me, either knowingly or unknowingly, I now offer my forgiveness. for whatever harm that has been caused to me, either knowingly or unknowingly, I now offer my forgiveness. And then letting go of that, you can reflect now on any harm or disrespect or that you've given yourself. Ways of being excessively self-critical or judgmental or ignored ourselves or ignored our deeper wisdom, ignored our body, taking care of it. For whatever harm I have caused to myself, either knowingly or unknowingly, I now forgive myself. For whatever harm I have brought on myself, either knowingly or unknowingly, I now soften and open to myself with forgiveness. And then holding yourself, holding an image of yourself, a felt sense of yourself, feeling maybe the preciousness of your humanity, of your life. Offer loving kindness. Open up to yourself in loving kindness. Soften your body in loving kindness to yourself. Breathing in and breathing out. May I be happy. May I be free from worry and anxiety. May I be filled with joy. May I be free from harm. May I never forget my deepest goodness. May I be at peace. Breathing in through the chest, through the heart, fullness, loving kindness. Breathing out calmness, peacefulness. And then bring to mind now some part of yourself which you find difficult. Some part of yourself which causes you anxiety or distress, or that you're critical of, or and hold this difficult part of yourself in the field of loving kindness. Or as Rilke says, all things difficult within us are things which are helpless, which really need our love. May this difficult part of me be at ease. May this difficult part of me be free from harm and worry. May this difficult part of me experience the warmth of loving kindness. May this difficult part of me be at peace. And now softening your mind, softening your heart. Bring to mind someone in your life these days who is a friend or a benefactor. Someone for whom you feel love or respect or delight in their existence in your life. And perhaps you can have an image of their face in front of you, or a felt sense of their presence. May you be happy. And as you say these words, you can maybe say their name as you sink into the feeling, the intention of the phrases of loving kindness. May you be happy. May you be filled with joy. May you be free from harm and danger. May you have good health. May you be filled with delight. May you live your days in ease. May you be at peace. And then continuing to breathe in and out through your chest. Then bring to mind some person from your recent times, today or this week or recently, who somewhat mildly irritates you, you don't like particularly, but someone who's never done you any harm. There's simply, there's something about them which you find difficult or irritating. Remembering this person, visualizing them perhaps. Remembering the situation you were in last. Were you with them or near them? And you felt your irritation. And then imagining, maybe reflecting on the good quality or qualities this person also might have. Or reflecting on the desire and the capacity of this person for happiness. And if you know their name, you can state it quietly as you say the following phrases. May you be happy. May you be relaxed and content with your life. May you be free from anxiety or worry. May you be filled with joy and delight. May you be at peace. And then you can bring to mind some other difficult person from your life that you know. And you can perhaps imagine that the two of them are sitting together, the first difficult person and the second one. And you can use your creative imagination to imagine how they would sit together so they can enjoy each other's company. These two people you find difficult. May both of you enjoy each other's company. May May both of you be at ease. May both of you be filled with happiness. May both of you be at peace. And then bring to mind now finally a difficult person who's done you some harm, perhaps not great harm. You don't have to think of the most difficult person possible, but think of someone who's done you some harm. And holding this person's memory or image of their face in front of you, breathe in and out through your heart, letting your heart be open and soft. Perhaps stating the person's name, holding the name or the memory in your heart. And to whatever degree that you can, begin offering some loving kindness to this person. May you be happy. May you be free from worry and anxiety. May you feel content and safe in your life. May you experience the joy that arises out of your fundamental goodness. May your fundamental goodness blossom throughout your body and your behavior. May you be at peace. And then letting go of all these people, simply sit here with the feelings that exist in your body right now, the moods, the sensations. Breathing in and out through the chest. Softening into the body. Yielding yourself into your body. And perhaps for the last few minutes here, you can send loving kindness to yourself. Sinking into yourself. Allowing maybe the loving kindness to arise out of your fundamental goodness. So there are various ways of beginning to soften the heart to, or send loving kindness to difficult people. One way is to reflect on some good quality they might have. It might be easy to think about many of their bad qualities, but spend some time thinking about maybe they have one or two that you can think of. And that can be a toehold to start feeling some loving kindness towards them. You can also sometimes imagine this. Often, when someone's causing a lot of difficulty for you, or is angry with you, or whatever, sometimes their behavior arises out of their own suffering. And sometimes it's possible to reflect on the suffering that must be behind that person's activities and actions. And if you can feel the suffering, then or see it, or perceive it, then sometimes you can have compassion for the person. And the compassion is very closely related to loving kindness, and the compassion becomes the way in to begin to have some softening to the person and some open heartedness. And it's also said sometimes, I don't know if it's just pop psychology or what it is, but it's sometimes said that when you find something that someone does irritates you, it's sometimes said that because that they have some quality that you don't like in yourself. Now, maybe sometimes it's true. If it's pop psychology, maybe sometimes. So it's an interesting thing to explore. If you meet someone, just they kind of rub you the wrong way. What's going on, you know, and what's actually rubbing you the wrong way? Is it them, or is it something within you, or something you don't want to see in yourself, or you fear in yourself? Or sometimes turning the mirror back on yourself in such situations is very useful. And before I ask you how all that was, I'll read you a story. Mulla Nasruddin decided to start a flower garden. He prepared the soil and planted the seeds of many beautiful flowers. But when they came up, his garden was filled not just with his chosen flowers, but also overrun by dandelions. He sought advice from gardeners all over and tried every method known to get rid of them, but to no avail. Finally, he walked all the way to the capital to speak to the royal gardener at the sheikh's palace. The wise old man had counseled many gardeners before and suggested a variety of remedies to expel dandelions, but Mulla Nasruddin had tried them all. They sat together in silence for some time, And finally the gardener looked at Nasruddin and said, "Well, then I suggest you learn to love them." So how was that today, sitting here with forgiveness and yourself and difficult people? Yeah.
I'm flunking.
You were sitting there with a big smile on your face.
Yeah.
How could you flunk with such a smile?
My brain, I just, you know, when the irritated person, and you say, you be happy, and I think, schmuck. I came up to a counter to each thing, and then people that I'm really angry at, it was like, no way. I just had to open my eyes.
Huh?
And like last week, like the one person that comes to mind is my husband's boss, who even told me one time she takes a certain enjoyment out of being a sadist to her employees. And the best I can come up with is like not sending her a box of shit.
But you know what you want to do with, when you start doing this, it's a slow process of beginning to open up loving kindness to wider and wider circles. But you don't necessarily want to start with the people who are most difficult. You know, you start with something that's really easy. I mean, maybe you know, there was a store clerk today who was just, you know, slightly rude, just very slightly. But the next person he was a little, you know, next person they helped was this, you know, they went out of their way to help this little girl who was kind of, you know, I don't know. Just think of something, you know, start with someone who's just maybe not so difficult. And then slowly you can begin to expand.
I started with this neighbor. And then I would think things like, well, maybe be at peace except for fear of getting evicted because you're so noisy. I just, it feels contrived to really.
Yeah. So maybe it's not appropriate to do it to them. Just do it to do loving kindness in the directions that you can. And to yourself and to your feelings that you have. And how do you feel about having such feelings for your husband's boss? Do you feel indignant or justified in them? Or do you...
At this point, I feel like it's okay to have those thoughts as long as I don't act on it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it makes me laugh. And I get kind of giggly thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Revenge.
To someone else. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't sure if I could send her kindness or not. I went ahead and did it. I had some sense that that was very appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't talked about that. Talk about how it works.
Classically, in the classic instructions, you're not supposed to send loving kindness to people who are dead. It says only to living people and people of the same sex, they said also. But I've known, but I've known in that situation where people have actually harmed you or done, you know, hurt you or something, I've known many people have done loving kindness, afterwards. And see, loving kindness is closely related to forgiveness, and it's kind of a releasing of the bitterness. So if you do loving kindness to someone you're sexually attracted to, you know, or it's like someone, you know, sexually appropriate sex, it might get kind of complicated, the loving kindness. But if you're doing it to someone who you have resentment or anger towards, I think you're less likely to have that kind of difficulty. But you still have that holding. And as long as you have the holding, you're in pain. So you want to find some way to release that and open it. And one way to do that is to begin doing loving kindness. And loving kindness doesn't mean that you have to, it doesn't mean that you're condoning or ignoring or forgetting about what they've done to you. You still allow that to be there, but given that, is it possible to find some way to feel warmer or more open-hearted towards them? Same thing with forgiveness. In order to be able to forgive, forgiveness is this wonderful virtue in the West, at least, especially in Judeo-Christian traditions. So you're supposed to forgive, but in order for forgiveness to exist, there has to be resentment. If there's no resentment, you can't forgive. So suddenly, you know, now resentment becomes kind of close to being good, too. And But forgiveness doesn't. And also, in order to forgive, the event that you're forgiving someone for had to have been wrong or injurious. Because forgiveness is not excusing them or justifying it, or finding some understanding the situation better, understanding why they did it, and therefore it was okay. Then there's no reason to forgive them. So forgiveness and loving kindness doesn't mean that you stop seeing the situation as having been inappropriate. And you see it. You say, yeah, that was wrong to have done that. But even so, is there some aspect of their life or some aspect of who they are who you can offer loving kindness to? And so I think it's probably often very appropriate to do it to people who are dead. I'm sorry I talked so long. Maybe you had more to say. Yes.
I kind of got stopped from, I guess it was from the part about someone that you've hurt, someone that I've hurt. You said something like feeling bad about it, and I realized I didn't feel bad about having done what I did. So I guess there's still some feeling of justification. Mm-hmm. So at that point, do you just decide, well, it's not
maybe at this point it's inappropriate to be involved in the process of forgiveness. But certainly it should still be possible to have feelings, open to feelings of loving kindness to that person. And if you can't, then I would suggest that there's some kind of holding. Some kind of holding back, some kind of blockage of the heart. And you might stop doing loving kindness then and explore that with mindfulness and explore your heart and your what's going on with that person, the feelings there.
Very easy for me to do this in the group, and both with the loving kindness and with the Vipassana, I feel like my experience is much stronger within a group, and I have a lot more difficulty sitting on my own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And staying focused, and and being able to sit for any length of time.
Yeah.
It seems very powerful to me.
It is very powerful. One of the things to be said about that is that I spent years, many of my early years of practice in Zen monasteries, where it's all group practice, and there's no question about are you going to go meditate? I mean, the bell rings and you go, or you leave the monastery, they kick you out. You know, it's like it's a monastery, right? So you follow the life of the monastery. And everybody's doing the same thing. So you have all this group support. Now it's time to go work, now it's time for this, now it's time to... Everybody's kind of doing things together. And what I saw was that for some people in that environment never found their own motivation to practice, their own intention. They didn't kind of find some way to discover their own deepest intention to practice and how to follow through on it. And so when they left the Zen monasteries and went out on their own, they fell apart. They didn't know what practice was. They didn't know how to practice. They didn't even know why they were practicing. It was easy with the peer pressure to kind of practice. And I think that it's very important at some point, it doesn't have to be, when you first start practicing, at some point to discover in yourself the source of motivation that encourages you to practice on your own, to find some way to bring practice into your daily life and into your own sitting practice at home. And part of that is finding your own deepest intention, your own motivation, what you really most want, what your heartfelt deepest wish for yourself. That's part of it. And the other part is to start noticing what gets in the way of following through on that heartfelt wish for yourself. And I don't know where you're at, whether you need to find the intention or you need to find what's holding you back. It might be a combination of both. But I would suggest to you that that's a very, very rich and important area for you to explore and get to understand and understand yourself in, and to hopefully find your own spirituality, find your own practice that is self-generating. And I mean, you're welcome to always come to a group, and you don't have to. It's probably beneficial, but that would help you find your own. And that's something we can talk about some other time together, privately, or if you want to talk more about it.
Is there anything that a person could do that shouldn't be forgiven? I mean, I'm asking that because I see some of the worst behavior that people do.
So maybe when we forgive, we're not forgiving what they did. We're forgiving them as a person. We're not condoning what they did. What they did remains wrong. But your forgiveness is a willingness to be open-hearted to that person again. To let go of the resentment. But it doesn't mean that you've condoned or even accepted the rightness of that phenomena. But no, for order for forgiveness to happen, and probably often for loving kindness also then, because we don't want to get too idealistic around all this, but you know, having to do it with everyone, you know, because it's a good idea. But in order for forgiveness and loving kindness to really work with difficult people, it really helps if they have apologized. It really helps if they stop doing what they're doing. If you're still receiving the injury from someone, it's very hard to forgive someone as they continue injuring you. So sometimes you have to get the situation to stop. And you have to get the situation, and it's very helpful if the person apologizes, because if a person apologizes and confesses, that means that they recognize that they're saying, I don't agree with this anymore, I don't condone what I did, I don't stand behind what I did anymore. So the person themselves has separated themselves from the event that they've done. And if they separated themselves from it by a confession or an apology, then it's a lot easier to open up to them as a person. But if they're still standing behind what they did, and maybe even still doing it, I think it's very hard, maybe even inappropriate, in that situation, to have forgiveness to someone.
Because it's firmly complaining. I mean, I can understand intellectually the concept and the benefit of that, but there's certain people, for instance, this man that murdered two of his children, and I was dealing with him when he had done to his second child. I just can't even be, and he wasn't admitting it. I had such a, before I even knew it was, that that's what had happened, I was having this reaction to him that was like, this is, and I trusted that. I said, I don't know what that is, but my body knows something's off.
Yeah.
And it just seems like there's some people that just are so twisted. Mm-hmm. Hard to imagine that.
One of the ground rules for mindfulness, and probably for Buddhism at large, is to it's very important to distinguish between the ideal and the actual. And there's often a big difference between the ideal and the actual, right? And Buddhism is a lot has more to do about the actual than the ideal. So what you really want to do is to discover and wake up what's actually happening. And don't be too concerned about some kind of ideal of loving kindness or forgiveness or all these ideas. We do it as a practice. And remember, see, maybe it's because we have this Judeo-Christian background, where forgiveness is this absolute thing that comes from God, you know, and we have to confess, you know, and it's a major thing. I mean, forgiveness is this major, you know, theological thing in the West. And, you know, are we right? Are we wrong? Are we this? Are we that? You know, and it has to happen and all that. In Buddhism, loving kindness and forgiveness practice is a meditation practice we're doing for ourselves, for our own benefit. And so so we do it to the degree which is helpful for us. So you don't necessarily have to kind of have some kind of you know, great idealistic justification. You have to forgive the most difficult murderer in San Jose, and just start where you're at and make it easy for yourself. It's practices for your sake, not his sake.
Well, it just occurs to me, well, they don't even need to know that I'm doing this.
Sorry?
They don't need to know that I'm
drinking
this.
Yeah. So anyway, there's a very important point, I think, is distinguishing between the actual and the ideal. And in Buddhism, we tend, you know, we kind of forget about the ideal in favor of waking up to the actual And that the teaching of Buddhism is, if you can really wake up to the actual, then everything will be fine. But if you try to live the ideal, then you begin entering into problems. That makes sense? Anything else a lot to end today with that you'd like to talk about? Or is...
What you're saying is, don't be too perfectionist about it.
Exactly. Give yourself a break. So my intention is to come for the next 2 weeks and just continue doing loving kindness at 5:30. How many of you think you will come? So it's nice to continue. Good. And then I don't know when I like to, I mean, my ideal is to be able to offer this every Thursday, but it's not so easy for my life to do that. So probably I'll do it for 2 more weeks, and then I'll figure out when I can start again. But it might not be until January. And what would be nice to have is a group of people who felt that they wanted to lead loving-kindness meditation. So it can happen without my necessarily always being here. But I don't know if any of you have enough experience and background in it that you feel brave enough to want to do that. And I don't know anybody I can invite in just for this hour. So until we figure it out, and I underline the word we, I'll do it when I can. And when I can't come, I guess we won't meet. Unless I hear other ideas from you.
Is the room open anyway? On Thursday?
No.
I mean, not just simply come and sit?
Well, someone has to get a key. There's no key. I have a key. So thank you all very much, and it was a wonderful 4-week course, and I guess it's going to be a 5-week course next week, and a 6-week course after that.
But it needs more work.